The United States versus Thompson. Case number 5, please.
May it please the court, Robert Handelsman for the appellant. I'll argue the threat evidence is presented in the reply brief and will rest on the briefs for argument 2. Thomas states the general rule for use of threat evidence and should be applicable regardless of whether the evidence is used in a case in chief or to cross-examine an opponent's witness. There is no reason to distinguish one from the other. A cross-examiner must have a good faith basis before asking impeaching questions. We consider this rule a good faith basis for impeaching questions with Thomas. The proponent of threat evidence on cross-examination must show some causal connection between the threats and the statement which the cross-examiner is trying to impeach. And that was not done here because there was no evidence of threats after the time that the witness took the trip with the defendant Thompson. Witness Shimon should have been asked right off the bat why her story changed between Thompson's arrest and the trial. Getting a negative answer to the question of whether threats motivated her testimony after bringing out the history between her and Thompson was a clear violation of Rule 404, as it allowed the government to argue in closing that Thompson should be convicted because he has a propensity for violence. The open door concept is a red herring. Shinneman was asked about Thompson's criminal record on direct to show she knew she could get him in trouble. Because Thompson was charged under 922G, the jury knew he had a record, allowing amplification of that record on cross as it pertained to Shinneman was an abuse of discretion. The open door concept has its limits, which you recognize in Manuel versus City of Chicago, cited in the reply brief. Instruction number 13 is a red herring. The purpose of this instruction was to protect Thompson from the prejudicial effect of the felony conviction, which was a predicate for the 922G charge. It had nothing to do with Shinneman's cross. This instruction says that the evidence of other wrongs was to explain the background of the charge. But the government doesn't elicit evidence of the background of a 922G charge by crossing a defense witness about threat evidence. Background for the charge was not a reason given by the AUSA when he asked permission for this cross on page 14 of the appendix. This was a close case. The evidence of knowledge and intent was borderline, and this kind of evidence could be just enough to push the jury into convicting. Thank you.
All right, counsel.
If it pleases the court, Timothy M. Morrison, Assistant U.S. Attorney, representing the government in this case. The defendant, Thompson, challenges the district court's decision to permit cross-examination.
Mr. Morrison, maybe in your presentation you could put this particular issue in a somewhat broader context. Let us know exactly what the essence of the government's case against this defendant was.
The essence of the case against the government was that he had been arrested. He was alone at the time of arrest. He was driving a Dodge Neon, which the police approached after he had indicated to them that he was cold and he wanted a jacket. When the police went to the jacket, the record shows that when they went to the car, they found the jacket, they picked the jacket up, they walked it back to where he was at the ambulance, and then...
Why was he in the ambulance?
That's not part of the record, but it was a dog bite. In order to arrest him, they used dogs.
Do we know what he was arrested for?
He was arrested on a warrant for... an offense against Kimberly Shinneman, the witness here. It was a warrant which had been issued previously for an October 24th, I believe that's correct, October 24th offense, and he was arrested on November 21st, this date that's charged in this offense, for the October 24th offense against Ms. Shinneman. When the officer then hung up the held the jacket up, which the officer found in the car. At that point, Mr. Thompson, there was a confrontation, or there's some words which are not part of the record. They were suppressed by the court. He begins to leave, and at that point, that's when Mr. Thompson says, "Hey, it's cold in the lockup. Could I have my jacket?" Inside the jacket were 12 rounds of 38 caliber ammunition.
I understand there were jackets for both the defendant and this woman in the car, apparently. There was a lot of clothes in the car.
I think, Your Honor, if you examine the record, that the only jacket that was found in the passenger compartment that was identified by Detective Gray, and I think that's the transcript 30 of the record, indicates that there were some other clothes like socks, a change, jeans, other things in the back seat, but the only jacket in the passenger compartment was the one that he showed.
Was there another jacket in the trunk?
According to Ms. Shinneman, there was. According to the defendant, who made a call to Ms. Shinneman's answering machine, which is reflected in Government Exhibit 7 and Government Exhibit 8, the transcript of that call, he called her after his arrest and said, "I got, you know, get my boots, get my jacket, you know, and other clothes out of the car." He had given her that directive, and that was part of the evidence.
The elephant in the room when reviewing this record was, are these people the same size? And she's claiming it was her jacket. I mean, but there's certainly no evidence as to whether or not her jacket had ever fit him.
The jackets were put back into the car, and then were claimed by her. The police did not keep the jacket. There is testimony in the record from Detective Gray that he thought that the jacket that he had picked up and showed to the defendant was a medium to larger size jacket.
Was there an inventory of the clothing in the car by the police officers?
No, there was not.
And what jurisdiction are we talking about here?
Southern District of Indiana.
No, I'm sorry. The municipal jurisdiction.
Indianapolis Police Department, yes. The essence of this is that the district court's decision...
I'm sorry, I'll just finish up with Judge Ripple. He gave him the police officer gave him the coat, the jacket, to wear in the lockup?
No, he did not, but the I believe the testimony is that they don't know what happened to it or it went back into the car. But he did not have the jacket at the lockup.
And the jacket itself was never admitted in evidence?
No, it was not admitted and not recovered. The defendant challenges the district court's decision to permit cross-examination of his witness on the issue of bias. And that witness, Kimberly Shinneman, was obviously in an abusive relationship with Thompson. And the district court's decision, made during trial and considered again on the motion for new trial, should be reversed only for an abuse of discretion. And the district court made an appropriate 403 balancing test because clearly one of the elements that one goes to when they're trying to cross-examination an individual for bias can be fear. And in this circumstance, that bias, that slant that is given for someone who is being impeached with their testimony, that bias may be either conscious or it can be unconscious. And what the government contends is that Thomas here is misapplied to this case by Defendant Thompson, and it's misapplied because Thomas is essentially a threat evidence used to boost your own witness's credibility. This was not the circumstance here. Ms. Shinneman was not called by the government. She was the defendant's witness. We did not use her to boost any credibility or to put any evidence of threats to her to boost her credibility. She was not favorable to the government's case. She was testifying for the defendant. The scope of the cross-examination was limited only to acts which were committed by the defendant against Ms. Shinneman. As the record reflects, he had a relatively extensive felony history, and none of that got before the jury. There were no questions asked about other kinds of offenses that he had committed outside those directed at her. Thomas does not apply because, as the analysis goes through a couple of cases, Gomez and Aito and Dudley versus Duckworth, when you look at those kinds of cases that are cited in Thomas, the court admitted evidence to explain a delay in reporting by one witness, and also the Court also admitted, or rather, found improper the admission of threats to explain what was called extreme nervousness, but was not demonstrated in any way.
How did this cross-examination proceed? I mean, you confronted her with a prior inconsistent statement.
She had already admitted the prior inconsistent statement on her direct testimony.
Well, I mean, you just had to bring it up, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
She was just, in her direct, she said, no, that those bullets were mine. And
what, did you tell the police that they were actually his, which occurred after his arrest? She did not institute the arrest. It was her statements afterwards. And she said,
but the inconsistency was brought out in the direct examination.
It was. But my submission is, and what I contend, that the law of cross-examination, obviously, to explore bias needs to be broadened. For instance, if I have a close relationship with X, and there is a fact that X is interested in some X litigation, and I testify in favor of X. Now, that could be because I am consciously trying to tilt my testimony towards X. It could be that I am unconsciously, because of my positive relationship with X, it could color or affect how I perceive things. And I believe that the law, in a fair reading of United States versus Abel, is that that's really conscious or unconscious, and the government should be expected and should be permitted to explore that relationship, because fear is definitely something that creates bias, and that is the source of the cross-examination, and that was the reason that it was done that way. Anything else? Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Morrison was speaking. I looked through Detective Gray's testimony. I didn't see anything in there as to the basis for the arrest warrant. Now, it may have been elsewhere in the record. I'm not saying it's not. I just didn't see it while I was looking at that and trying to listen to what was going on. The point here I think you have to concentrate on is all the threats were seen to be from the record were prior to the trip she took for a week with him. Now, if she was so worried about threats, she wouldn't have gone on that trip. So right there, and this was brought out very emphatically before Judge Barker, that militates against using threat evidence here because her testimony was not motivated by threats. There's no evidence as to what size jacket either one of them wore, whether Shineman was a larger woman or Thompson was a smaller man, or... So that's one of the open questions in this case. Mr. Morrison mentioned something about abuse about the discretionary call under Rule 403. I would submit to you that in the posture of this case, Rule 403 and the issue of Rule 403 is not a discretionary standard, but it's a question of law. And the reason for that is that the evidence here of threats does not come close to the standards that are stated in Thomas. And if they can't even get within the four corners of Thomas, this is not a discretionary call. Of course, obviously, the admission or exclusion of evidence is discretionary. But when you're so far outside the four corners of what the law states as a minimum standard for this evidence, it's a question of law and not an abuse of discretion. Mr. Morrison also mentioned something about testimony explore bias. Your Honors, threat evidence is diametrically opposite to the question of bringing out bias. Can't imagine a situation where a witness has been threatened is biased in favor of the threatener. So we'd ask you
wouldn't?
Pardon me?
You wouldn't?
I could not imagine a situation where a witness who has been threatened is biased in favor of the person doing the threats. They'd be biased the other way.
What if it's her boyfriend and she forgave him?
And she what?
She forgave him.
Well, then she, as I said when I was up here before, she should have been asked right off the bat why her story changed. But to bring out all this dirty history between them and then ask him, well, you're testifying this way because he threatened you. And after the jury sees that they went on a trip together for a week, this is just what Rule 404 prohibits. and ask you to reverse this conviction and remand for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor. Thank you, Counselor. We will proceed to